Welcome to The Point on WCAI. I'm Steve Junker. It's Friday, July 26th, and this is our weekly news roundup when we discuss some of the top local news stories of the week with our colleagues in the print and digital media. Joining me in the studio from the Cape Cod Times is Ethan Genter. Good morning, Ethan.
Good morning, Steve.
And also with us is WCAI lead reporter Sarah Mises-Tan. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Steve.
Joining us later will be Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle. We'll speak with Casey Myers at the Provincetown Banner and George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. And now a look at some of the news here around the Cape and the islands. One story to talk about, and that's the tornadoes that touched down on the Cape on Tuesday. That's right. It was not one tornado skipping along, but it is now officially designated by the National Weather Service as two tornadoes. There's a lot to talk about here. Let's start by laying out a timeline. This happened when, Sarah?
So it looks like it began as a waterspout just off of Kalmus Beach in Hyannis, and it kind of moved inland around noon and...
On Tuesday.
It's been a bit of a blur, but yeah, Tuesday. And then it then moved on to Yarmouth and then Harwich after that, shortly thereafter.
And it was
about like 110 miles per hour.
And originally, they thought it was one tornado that kind of leaped, and it took them a little while to... pull the data out and figure out that they now designated as two tornadoes. Not that it makes a lot of difference if you're trying to deal with the debris here or if you were going through the power outages for all that time.
Yeah, it does seem like two tornadoes that they are both designated as EF1 tornadoes.
Which is the lowest category?
It's the second lowest. There's also an EF0, which is kind of just like strong winds. But yeah, this is, I guess, the second weakest. It's not the strongest. EF5, I believe, is the strongest, and that is the type of tornado that would rip houses off their foundations. But of course, still, damage has been done.
So it did take the roof off a hotel in South Yarmouth, or a portion of the roof. Ethan, tell us about this.
Yeah, the Cape Sands Inn, and I mean, that video is kind of circulated pretty far and wide. I mean, you just see it really come just flying off. And it's pretty miraculous that there's been no reported significant injuries or casualties at all. And you see some of these areas that were damaged. It's pretty amazing that no one was really hurt in any of this.
I think it is worth talking about that for a moment, because you think about us being right now at the height of tourist season. The Cape is loaded with people, and this is such a fast-moving storm. I mean, this came up quick, and it inflicted damage quickly and then moved off, and yet there have been no reported casualties and no reported significant injuries yet. I guess people are still holding their breath a little bit around this.
Yeah, so I mean, the first tornado hit around noon, and then when the tornado hit Harwich, I mean, it's all over by about 12:10, 12:15, and so it hits noon. I was talking to one firefighter, and he said he couldn't see. He was driving to a call, and he couldn't see during his ride there. And then after everything stopped, he had to put sunglasses back on because it was so bright just with the sun. So, I mean, it was just kind of this thing that really ripped through.
He couldn't see just with the wind and rain blowing.
He couldn't, yeah, originally. And then he had to put his sunglasses on because he couldn't see because it was so bright. I mean, it was just kind of this wild storm that we're not really accustomed out here. And yeah, I mean, you go through some of these areas that are hit in Harwich, in Dennis, in Yarmouth, even into Chatham and a little bit into Orleans. There's just trees everywhere. They're uprooted, these 100-year-old, 65-foot-tall trees just all over the place.
Sarah, you were there in Harwich also that aftermath day talking to road crews and utility crews.
Yeah, and I did hear a lot of people mentioning that they hadn't seen damage like this since Hurricane Bob, even though the duration of this was about like 5 minutes or something. But yeah, certainly pretty significant damage given the very short amount of time that this all happened in.
Pretty significant damage, but then if you were in Brewster, if you were in, you know, Wellfleet, or if you're in Falmouth, you look around and you don't see anything. Whereas if it's a hurricane, of course, the impact is just widespread, but it was so discreet, the damage, where the area where it was inflicted.
I mean, even if you go to different pockets of Harwich or Yarmouth, you go to Yarmouth Port, there's not a blade of grass out of place. So it's just this very kind of, I guess that's how tornadoes work. We don't really deal with them a lot. Yeah, and it was the kind of thing, I think usually when we have bad storms out here, it's in the winter when there's nobody here. So it's this kind of thing that it was hard to respond. When I talked to a lot of firefighters and police, they're saying usually this, everyone knows, just stay in, bunker down, we got a storm coming. And this really just hit so fast. and there was just so many people out and about that didn't really understand what was going on, and then it was so over, and then you're trying to get to places, there's trees down everywhere. So yeah, it was, I think it was really hard for people to respond to things.
Yeah.
Sarah, you were on the scene at South Yarmouth at the hotel. Tell us what a little bit like what that was like. You were there just an hour after the roof came off and they were trying to cope with this. People were still coming back who had checked into the hotel but weren't there when the roof came off and coming back to find they couldn't get in. You talked to one group who had one of the rooms, I think, that had the roof come off.
Yeah, yeah. It actually, I guess this tornado happened at a very fortuitous time for the hotel. It was actually during their turnover time. And so there weren't a ton of people actually in the rooms. I did speak with someone who had checked in right before the hurricane hit, and they were like getting up to their room, and that's when they saw the roof blow off across. They had the room across the way from where the roof blew off, so that was pretty crazy. And then yeah, a couple, there was a family who was staying in one of the hotel rooms that were affected. They were out to lunch at the time, and they said actually where they were, there wasn't even really like a unified response. They weren't that far away, just around the corner, but they said people didn't really know what to do. Everyone was kind of like, oh, just get to the middle of the room, but yeah. It's not like we really have a protocol for tornadoes. And then apparently they got a call from the police maybe like 10 minutes after all this had passed saying, we need you to come back and see if you can collect your belongings. Turns out I don't think they were actually able to get up there. But yeah, no, a lot of people were very shocked coming back. Yeah.
And then that was kind of the first for many of us as we were trying to figure out what had happened. You saw this, what happened to the Cape Sands Hotel there. And then the power outage numbers started to come in. And that's when, for down in the news from here, that's when we started to put together a picture that there was this other swath of significant damage up through Harwich, because the power outage numbers just suddenly leaped up. There was a moment there Tuesday afternoon when 50,000 people were without power from this. Talk a little bit about what the scene was like in Harwich, that, you know, on the ground there as these trees and down lines were there.
And me and Sarah were both at a market, and the market was totally out of power. So the folks that run it, they were just kind of writing down every hand, noting every transaction. I mean, everything, nothing's really cold still. I mean, people are coming to get Gatorade. One guy came in, shouted if they had Red Bull.
This was the day after. This was Wednesday, right?
Yeah, this
was
Wednesday.
So they're trying to stay open to serve customers, and yet they have no power to run the cash register.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's just kind of the thing is, like, how do you resume normalcy when nothing really has power? I mean, I think phone lines, even at places like the police station for a bit, didn't have phones. Yeah, I mean, everyone's just trying to figure out where do we kind of go from here? What do we do? And I talked to the library director over at Brooks Libraries. They got a generator just recently, and I never imagined having to use it for a tornado. But they're like, we want to stay open because just having kind of something like this where it's not an emergency shelter, it's not the EOC or something they call them, it kind of gives you a little bit of normalcy, kind of having these institutions open. But yeah, I mean, everyone was kind of, I mean, you'd go to restaurants in Dennis, I went past the Lost Dog, and packed to brimming. You go to somewhere else, any place that like wasn't affected, people were driving over there trying to
get food, have their meals. Yeah.
And I was actually surprised just how quickly the main arteries through Harwich were cleared. I got to Harwich, I guess, on Wednesday. I don't know if you had a different experience, but a lot of the main roads had actually been very quickly cleared. You could still see the trees on the sides, but there was definitely a passway through. I know they were really, seemed like they were trying to do a good job of prioritizing, just making sure people could get through.
They definitely seemed to bring work crews in quickly and in big numbers. I think already by Wednesday, there were 700 crews on the Cape, they reported, and more than 1,000 yesterday. So the response seemed to be very quick. And then the governor was down here as well on, was that, I have to like do the,
Wednesday.
It was Wednesday. It's been a busy week. Talk a little bit about that. The governor came down to Harwich, essentially, to meet with emergency officials and local officials and take a little trip to see some of the damage. What did he have to say, and who was with him then?
He had, I guess there were Senator Julian Sear was there, a number of different local officials. He brought down a couple of people from the state. I'm sorry, I don't remember the departments in particular. Yeah,
Fire Chief Norman Clark was there. Christopher Clark,
the county administrator there.
The police chief was there. Someone from MEMA was there. Yeah, I mean, he basically said, we're still assessing everything. We're trying to get a figure on this. We are ready to dedicate whatever you guys need. Department of Corrections has sent quite a bit of people. The National Guard is now involved. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're sending a lot of people, and Eversource, like you said, has dedicated. I think one of the big differences with this storm is usually when we have kind of those winter storms, it's not four towns that are affected. It's usually a large swath of the state.
The whole outer Cape,
Eversource is usually all over the place running, trying to get things, where this was very localized.
Well, the governor even said when he was here, and somebody must have given him this information, that the damage was essentially contained to 2 square miles, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you, like, totaled up the area. So it was not a huge swath in the way that a hurricane might inflict damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, a very small amount. I don't know if they've come out with final numbers yet. I know they were saying they were trying to use drones to survey areas they couldn't get to see if any damage had been done in kind of the more difficult to get to areas. So, but yeah, about 2 square miles, I think.
So about 50,000 people without power on Tuesday. By Wednesday, that was about 30,000 people without power, and they were still thinking that their estimated time for global restoration, as they call it, like full restoration, was actually this evening at 6 o'clock, I think. But they've gotten ahead of that, and so that right now, essentially, power has been restored across the Cape.
Yeah, it looks like we looked at the outage map right before, earlier this morning, and it looks like there are like less than 5 outages in Harwich and Yarmouth and in places where there used to be thousands. So it looks like power is getting back online pretty quickly.
Ethan, tell us a little bit about you were at the dump yesterday in Harwich. Is this right? And so you kind of it's ground zero of where people who are starting to tackle this are bringing all the debris.
Yeah. So, I mean, right after you get all this down and off your house or off your car or wherever it was, you got to do something with it. So Harwich and I believe most towns have waived the branch dumping fee. And it was quite the scene out there. I mean, there was just truck after truck after truck. Every bed was full. Most of them were towing trailers, just filled with branches. And they stacked it into this pile that was, I would say, at least 20 feet high, couple hundred feet long. And there's just people, person after person. We were there probably about half an hour, 40 minutes. And we saw, I couldn't even tell you the amount of trucks we saw. They just came in one after another. And, I mean, you're talking residents. Contractors.
A cross-section, professional people and homeowners.
Department of Corrections guy was there. I mean, so you're getting people. I mean, I know Cranberry Valley Golf Course, the town-owned golf course in Harwich, that's going to be down for a bit. The town administrator told me the foreseeable future. So, again, that kind of goes to the tourism effects of this.
And I want to talk about that a little bit in a minute. This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker. We're going to the break now. Ethan Genter from the Cape Cod Times is with me. Sarah Mises-Tan from WCAI. You two, please stick around and we'll continue our discussion of the tornado and its aftermath. There's more in a moment. This is the News Roundup on The Point. We're discussing the top local news stories of the week. I'm Steve Junker. With me in the studio is Ethan Genter from the Cape Cod Times and WCAI's lead reporter, Sarah Mises-Tan. Before we went to the break, we were talking about the impact of on tourism of the tornado. Typically, when we have big weather events, we're talking about the fall or the winter. We get a nor'easter come through or a blizzard, and it knocks power out, and people just kind of hunker down, and the people who are here year-round are used to going without power even sometimes for a couple of days. This is a whole different thing. It happens in the middle of July, and it has potential impacts on the tourism. Sarah, I know you talked to Wendy Northcross at the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern. Actually, interestingly enough, you know, Julian Sear mentioned during the press conference with the governor that the damage is actually in a very contained area. So the Cape is still obviously open for business. If you weren't planning to go to these very particular areas in Yarmouth or Harwich, you can still come and everything still looks totally fine. Everything is up and running. And Wendy Northcross was actually saying she was really worried about some of the negative media coverage about all the damage. And she was worried that that would actually deter a lot of people who had been thinking of coming down to the Cape this weekend.
And in fact, the Boston Globe had kind of a very glib, snarky little piece about Hell Week on Cape Cod, saying that we had had the heat wave and then we had sharks and then we have a tornado, and kind of treating it lightly when this is something that really is impacting people here, particularly the tornado. It's nothing to be laughing at if you're in Harwich and you're dealing with it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is like the peak of the summer. This is when a lot of businesses, Wendy mentioned, like businesses like the Cape Sands Inn, this is when they make the majority of their money. And now, of course, they're closed for presumably the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a big hit.
One of the things that I thought was interesting was Wendy Northcross pointing out that actually in some ways it was a little boomlet for restaurants. And you were talking about that a little earlier, Ethan.
Yeah, I mean, there was places that obviously kind of reaped the benefits here, kind of because you have to go somewhere to eat, especially if you don't have power. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these restaurants, I talked to Bluefin's over in Chatham. And a place like that where you want to keep your fish cold and you don't have power for a few days, they have sub-zero freezers for all of their tuna and stuff like that. So they had to run out and get generators. And they were talking, I mean, being closed for a few days for them, they're talking like tens of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. kind of missed out on. But places like the Squire, the Chatham Squire, if people have never been there, it's kind of always the beacon in the storm out there in Chatham. It's always open. They've had a generator for 25 years or so, and they're kind of always a place people go when the power goes out. So yeah, you find a place to get your drinks and get your food in.
And Wendy was talking about just looking into some sort of resiliency fund to offer small loans to small businesses that have been affected through things that like insurance may not cover, like food loss or something like that.
I wanted to touch on the National Guard story because it is significant. The governor sends sends 500 troops to assist with the hardest hit areas here. And it sounds like they were out in force yesterday, and people reporting from the neighborhoods that they were kind of a high impact, just moving through a neighborhood very quickly and helping to clean things up.
Yeah, absolutely. I know down in Swan River, they were in that area, and they're kind of just going right through with chainsaws, cleaning everything up. And it's kind of the thing where you need hands, basically.
Yeah.
A lot of it. The Department of Corrections was also called in. They had 221 employees. There was even inmates, 88 inmates. And places like the Red Cross, Salvation Army were also called in. They were having places to set up food.
And they did open a shelter Tuesday night. And again, I guess it was open Wednesday, but it didn't sound like it was very I think there were two people maybe who checked in Tuesday night. So it didn't sound like that was the need that was not being met around here. There was also an article Tanner Stenning did in the Cape Cod Times about a couple of neighborhoods that lost, when they lost power, they lost cell service. And you can imagine in this day and age when pretty much your cell phone is your primary means of communication for many people, to be without cell service in a time when kind of everything, the power's out and there's trees down everywhere, that it's a significant issue. And that was in Papaneset and New Seabury.
Yeah, that's not even in the significantly hit areas. Yeah. That's in Mashpee, where kind of wasn't really in the path of anything. So, I mean, this even places that weren't hit by a tornado did have some
had the impact from this big storm. I also want to mention that the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency, which is MEMA, has created a new Cape Cod tornado website with information specific to the recent tornado event. That's at mass.gov, and you can find it there. It's /info/details Cape Cod tornado. And MEMA will be updating content as the recovery continues. If you're a homeowner dealing with this, there's resources there for you, for businesses as well. And they just have gathered together an amount of information about the tornado and what happened. Ethan Genter from the Cape Cod Times, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks so much, Steve.
And Sarah Mises-Tan, WCAI's lead reporter, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Steve.
We are going to speak right now with Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle. Good morning, Tim.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, Tim, tell us about the storm impacts there where you are.
Right. Well, I know Ethan and Sarah covered a lot of what happened in Harwich, which was where one of the tornadoes touched down, and Harwich Center, where it hit, just south of the elementary school, was just, you know, it sounds like a cliche, but it really did look like a bomb went off there, with the debris everywhere. And that the hurricane or the tornado lifted, and but the winds, according to the National Weather Service, sort of made a straight line run onto to Chatham. We had 90 mile per hour winds here, and the damage was almost as severe as what you saw in Harwich Center, with you know, just dozens and dozens of trees, big trees. Old trees, some iconic trees in downtown Chatham that had to be cut down because they lost so many branches. An airplane was flipped over at Chatham Airport. We had a report of boats in Stage Harbor and Oyster Pond getting sunk or breaking their moorings. There's a video that went kind of viral of somebody on a boat in Stage Harbor. And it really shows how quickly the wind whipped up and what happened on the water at that point. We also talked to a fisherman who was heading into Chatham Harbor and ran right into those winds, and his crew and he donned survival suits, and the pressure just dropped so rapidly that he said his ears popped and 15-pound hatches were like jumping into the air. And but when they got safely back to Aunt Lydia's Cove, they found that a couple of 80 or 90 pound hatch covers had just disappeared from the boat.
Yeah.
So that was an amazing thing. They were really lucky that they made it back without without any injuries. About 90% of Chatham ended up without power right after the weather hit here. And as you guys talked about, some of the restaurants in town that had generators were doing a great business. But for a while, it was pretty quiet. But people came out after the storm, and many of the shops stayed open. The Ben Franklin store here in town said they did a really steady business in flashlights and candles. And the same happened on Wednesday when the power was still out. It was restored late in the day into downtown Chatham and much of the rest of the town. And as you guys said, right now we're back with full power here in Chatham. And interestingly, the Chatham police reported at one point that Eversource crews were getting yelled at and getting lots of grief from people who
wanted their power back. I saw that report. Yeah, I saw that report.
And it's interesting because all we've heard other than that is been praise for Eversource's crews getting out there, getting things done as quickly as possible. You know, as you said, Eversource brought over 1,000 people into the area, and they did a really good job. The authorities here in Chatham just were praising them up and down for their work. And right now, just like in Harwich and Yarmouth and some of the other towns, residents here are going to be faced with cleaning up the aftermath, the branches, the partial trees that were down, all the leaves, and like in other communities, the town is letting people dispose of brush and other debris at the transfer station with no fees for a week or so.
And Tim, I want to ask you about the paper itself. I know you guys face some specific problems with this tornado moving in so quickly and knocking out power as you were trying to make publication. Tell us this story, because it's a good insight into what happens.
Sure. We were on deadline Tuesday at a little after noon when the storm hit here in Chatham. And, of course, we got the tornado warnings, and many of our staff members went into the basement to shelter, and we sort of watched as the winds passed. But, of course, we had no power after that and no internet, so we were sort of at a standstill of how to get the paper out. We had some laptops that we could use, and we did use to keep our website updated. What happened to us is that we ended up taking advantage of the hospitality of the Chatham Fire Department. We basically relocated our newsroom to the fire station, which is right up the road from us. They had a conference room they lent us. They had a generator, and they also had internet connection, which was kind of the critical part of the whole thing for us. And so we worked all day Wednesday to gather all the news, get the paper out. And we ended up coming out a day late, but we were able to to marshal our forces, and also with the help of the fire department, get the news out. The news waits for no one, and it doesn't wait for storms either. We were a little delayed, but we managed to get everything out.
Has it happened before that the paper's been a day late?
The last time we can remember was during Hurricane Bob back in the 90s. It was a similar situation. I believe that the power was out for a long period of time, and we had to wait out the storm at that point. And the paper was delayed, I think, for a day back then as well.
Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle. We had planned also to touch on the fact that there's dredging planned for Aunt Lydia's Cove. We're out of time right now, Tim, but I encourage folks to check out that story on the Cape Cod Chronicle website. Tim, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker, and we are discussing the top local news stories of the week. Joining us now on the phone is Casey Myers from the Provincetown Banner. Good morning, Casey.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Casey, I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. I want to ask you first about the storm. Provincetown, Wellfleet, Truro. How did the Outer Cape make out this week?
You know, amazingly well. It was so localized. I had relatives contacting me saying, are you okay? And I barely noticed anything except a lot of rain. So it was amazing. I think a few people lost power in Wellfleet, but for the most part, it was just rain.
And again, this sort of highlights how you could be in an almost adjacent area of the Cape and not realize what had happened down across Harwich Center, say.
No, exactly. The only thing that we did notice is that people came here and were trying to get hotel reservations because they had to leave that Yarmouth hotel area. I think a lot of people were displaced and they came up to P-Town to find a hotel.
Mm. Casey, let me ask you, it's Family Week starting this weekend in Provincetown. Tell us what this is about.
Okay, this is the 25th anniversary of Family Week. It started as a very small event in the 1990s, and this year they're expecting over 550 families. And the growth is really noticeable. For years, Family Week came and went when no one would notice it at all. But now, as of, I think, just last year, you could see strollers everywhere, large groups of kids playing and huge picnics. It's impossible to miss. Last year, it was actually really funny because at the Crown and Anchor, which is a bar and restaurant known for drag shows and wild dance parties, but at one point last year, the entire outdoor patio was stuffed with baby carriages. So anyway, Family Week began to boom following legalization of same-sex marriage in 2015.
And there are
4 years after, yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
there are some events connected with this Family Week.
Yes, absolutely. It's a really fun week for the families. There's a parade on Friday at 5. There's a family pool party, a single parent gathering, a campfire, a teen panel. It's co-sponsored by Collage, which is a nonprofit organization founded by children of gay parents. So they've seen a lot of changes, too, because it went from being they were, you know, literally the only people in their whole town who might have parents like that, to now it's much more common. Anyway, along with all the fun, there's going to be some very serious discussions, particularly about how gay people can become parents in the first place. Family Equality, the other nonprofit along with Collage that co-sponsors this, says there are 120,000 children in the nation's foster care system who are waiting for a permanent family. And same-sex couples, we know, are 7 times more likely to serve as foster or adoptive parents than heterosexual couples. But there's a lot of discrimination still across the nation on their ability to adopt. And surrogacy is becoming increasingly popular, especially for gay male couples. And surrogacy costs anywhere from $120,000 to $175,000. But it is becoming a real option for people. And yet 10 states in the nation also have laws that don't protect parents seeking a surrogate mother, and New York is one of them. So that's a big push.
So a lot of good information around Family Week as well for folks coming to town. And tell us again, there's a Family Pride Parade. When is that?
Okay, that is actually Friday afternoon, although the time was not on their schedule the last time I checked.
Okay. For Friday a week from today.
Yes, August 1st.
Terrific. Casey Myers
sorry,
from
second,
August 2nd. Casey Myers, Provincetown Banner. Casey, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And we're going to speak right now with George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Steve.
George, I'll ask you, since we've asked everybody else, how did the vineyard fare this week in the storms? I imagine you got off pretty light.
Yes, it was a bit of a fright, though, there for a while. There were, of course, the tornado warnings, and there was a lot of concern about that. There was some damage, some trees down, some, nothing like what happened on the Cape, obviously, but some boats broke their moorings, and there was one sailboat that lost its mast. And there were reports of waterspouts off of Tashkent. Mm.
There was that moment there early Tuesday morning, maybe in the 11 o'clock hour, when those tornado warnings came on, and we were looking at the radar map here, and those cells were kind of coming right up the Elizabeth Islands, it looked like.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, I got an anxious text from my wife, telling me if I hadn't already known that, that she was hearing on the television news, Tisbury had a target on it. So, there was some definite heightened concern here.
I want to ask you about the Vineyard Transit Authority strike. The bus drivers, the full-time year-round drivers, have been on strike since the end of June. And for the first few weeks, it seemed like very little progress was being made. But this week, things may have shifted.
Yeah, we had breaking news last night that they've reached a tentative agreement, actually.
Ah, I had not heard that. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so they've reached a tentative agreement with the parent company, TCI, that would increase wages and make some other things that the drivers were looking for, some security, in terms of, bringing in other drivers, seasonal drivers, wouldn't result in any layoffs, and that drivers working on holidays would, get improved pay. So they're heralding this as a win. Of course, it's not ratified yet. The union will be meeting on Sunday. And at that point, there'll be a ratification vote. And if they ratify it, deal done and strike over. So, yeah, big development last night. And so we'll see what happens on Sunday. And, of course, we'll have reporters working on that and bring the news as soon as possible. But, yeah, this has been a long, long journey for these bus drivers. The strike has been going on for about a month, but it's really been a five-year journey for them. They felt like they weren't being treated properly. They tried to unionize. There was some conflict with that. It was a legal battle for a long time. And then once they did get the union, TCI was unwilling to go to the table, finally got a federal mediator involved.
That's the company that runs the bus line.
That's correct. They actually hire the drivers. There's Vineyard Transit Authority, the administration there runs the actual bus line, but they hire this company, TCI, which is a national company that hires bus drivers all across the country for regional transit authorities. So, yeah, this is big news for the drivers. They're very excited about it and feeling good about the support they received from the island community and beyond.
I'm curious to ask you, the drivers were up at the State House this week, kind of making their presence felt on Wednesday, I think it was. And what shifted, do you think, that suddenly it seems that this happened very quickly after a lot of acrimony and a lot of sort of pushback on both sides? Suddenly something must have shifted. Do you have a sense of what happened here?
If I had to pick one thing, it would be that some town leaders started to get involved. There was a lot of support beyond, but it didn't seem to be reaching the level of the boards of selectmen on the island. But at that contentious meeting about a week ago, there was representation. Aquinnah was there saying they wanted an end to this. Very important to their business community, which is only open during the season, the tourist season, I should say. And, they were having trouble getting people up there. And, some of the other towns also jumped in and said, look, this is an important service for our people here. Year-rounders as well as visitors, you need to get something done. And the VTA Advisory Board which answers to those boards took a vote and said, pretty much demanded that TCI get back to the table, and they did, and they were able to hammer out an agreement.
You have another story this week. It's getting a lot of traction on social media, I gather. Edgartown is taking steps to change the rules around its Independence Day parade. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this is one of those things. You knew it was going to get this kind of attention when Brian Dowd came back and told me what they had decided at this meeting. It's a ban on throwing candy from floats during the 4th of July parade. This is like a tradition like no other, right? People tossing candy to kids on the sidelines. But the concern is that those kids will then run out in front of other parade vehicles and get injured. So that was the reason for this. There were some other recommendations that were made as well, and the selectmen adopted all of them, including this ban on throwing candy. But that's the one that really touched the nerve. Hundreds of comments on Facebook pages, both on our Facebook page, and there's a Facebook page here called Islanders Talk, where it's sort of blown up. And there's mixed feelings. It's not all one-sided. You know, people aren't up in arms with the selectmen, so to speak. There are people who are saying, yeah, this is really not a good idea to throw candy off these floats because of the safety issue. And also, you know, they wonder where this tradition came from. You know, it's 4th of July is not one of the holidays you think of
for candy.
Holiday.
Not like Halloween or Easter even, yes. Well, right now these rules are in place, but there's more discussion. Is that where we leave this?
Yeah, so what we were told is that, the selectmen did vote 2-0. There was one of the selectmen was not there to adopt these, but Joe Salito, who's the person in charge of the parade, says, you know, there's still time to tweak these before the next 4th of July parade. You know, not sure that they'll make any adjustments on this, but it's interesting that, you know, we posted this story soon after the meeting, and we got a call from Mr. Salito, and he asked us to if we could tweak the story a bit and just make it crystal clear that it's not a ban on candy, that it's a way to make the candy distribution, so to speak, differently. So I guess people walking with containers of candy and handing them out, not tossing them to people. So pretty interesting what gets people talking, but this definitely did.
George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. George, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Steve. Have a good weekend.
You too. That is our news roundup for the week. I want to thank my guests. We spoke with Ethan Genter from the Cape Cod Times and Sarah Mises-Tan from WCAI. We had Tim Wood on from the Cape Cod Chronicle, Casey Myers from the Provincetown Banner, and George Brennan there from the Martha's Vineyard Times. I'm Steve Junker. Thank you for listening.